Welcome back to another episode of Rob Talk, the Robco's podcast, where we talk about, well, everything that is related to robots and the future of robotics. And today we have a really interesting topic, and we're talking about dancing robots. And you've all seen these videos coming, especially from China, where you've seen like robots dancing and doing kung fu moves and, you know, dancing with humans maybe even, or, you know, doing these incredible flips onto boxes, off boxes, and breakdance moves, which basically are better than any human could do them. And this is something that I think has always gone viral around the internet since already 2016.
Rob Talk, the autonomous robotics podcast. Physical AI, no theory, just reality.
Yeah, my question is to you, Clemens, and Clemens obviously working at Robco as one of the principal engineers and really deep into this topic. Have we solved human robotics now? When I see all of these videos?
They're extremely impressive. The technology has improved so much over the recent years, but we're far away from having solved humanoids.
But I see these humanoids, like they're on stage with 30 other performers, and there's 30 robots all in sync, all doing in synchronicity, doing like the same moves in perfect execution.
Yes, but it's just a very fancy way to do a scripted sequence.
Okay,
in this case,
basically a demo, right?
It is a demo, but an extremely good one.
Okay. So we have this because, like, we've all seen the videos, right? But the question for me is, when they can do this, couldn't they do the same choreography in a factory?
They could. We can talk about all sorts of different things. Obviously, there's not only the dancing robots, there's also the marathon that we should probably talk about.
Okay.
But what's the challenge in the factory? Maybe you could have scripted movements, but what's the point, right? Either you have a scripted motion, then probably wheels are good enough and much more stable.
Makes sense, yeah.
Or you want to solve a much larger problem, which is, okay, what do I do as a human when I move to a factory? I have a goal in mind, and then the movement comes just by reaching that goal, right? It's a means to an end.
Yeah.
And so that part is completely not covered by the dancing robots. And maybe we should talk a little bit about how they came about.
Yes.
And the whole development there, because it's been a long time coming, right? Mm-hmm. People have been building humanoid robots for 30 years, but then something happened, which was the Fukushima accident. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly you had a very nasty environment, and that's when that was in 2011, right?
Yes.
And so the DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, the arm of the U.S. Army, which hands out research grants, they are sometimes doing these challenges. They did challenges on autonomous driving, but they also did challenges around locomotion with humanoids.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that was 2013, 14, 15. So they said, okay, what if we had to move about in an environment like Fukushima? Could these robots do things completely autonomously? Like, where do we stand? And the results were not really good at that point.
Yes. Yeah, you sent me a video in advance, which was really funny, and I'll just describe a few scenes. So there's robots trying to get out of cars, like simple cars, which are open. They don't have to open doors. They just have to step out of an open Jeep. They start jittering, falling over. Then we have other robots trying to open doors where they miss the handle or they grab the handle, but then just fall backwards and cannot move anymore. And then there's also something that is really interesting. So they try to manipulate their environment. Like there's a valve that they want to turn something off, like a gas leak or steam coming out or something like that. And the robot misses the handle and grabs the air and just falls over because he doesn't have the counterweight. And so this is not just one example. There's, I would say, at least 25 in this video. And it's really interesting to see how, well, I would say like how fragile they are in that moment. And we humans would never have an issue with that because we counterbalance and we move so fast. But the robots just, in 2015 at least, they couldn't.
Yeah. So, I mean, especially like when you think about the time, where did we stand in terms of technology there? So all of the controls for the robots were still very, very hand-tuned. Mm-hmm. So people were using MATLAB to understand the model of their robot, and then they built the program and for a particular movement, and then they optimized tons of parameters to make it work. The compute was very limited. Not even the drives were very good. They didn't have what we call this back drivability or this kind of sensing fashion back then. So a lot of it was engineering, and trying to capture the dynamics of an 80 kilo humanoid. It just was extremely challenging, and it took years to really get that really under control. People got very far with without like AI over the years. So we much later we had robots that were able to, you know, climb on boxes and even do backflips and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
But even that was just, you know, very, very constrained to this one situation. So then what changed? And I think the big change was that, first of all, we had neural nets coming in,
mm-hmm.
and reinforcement learning, and simulation, because simulation environments, what they do is they at the core of a simulation environment is a physics engine,
mm-hmm.
and we understand physics in the normal 3D environment pretty well. Basically, Newton mechanics.
Yeah.
Right. So just understanding how gravity reacts to like the forces that gravity pulls on a particular limb of a robot, that can be simulated extremely well already. And so what people did then was to take a digital twin of their robot and put it in simulation, and then parallelize it massively. And gave it a task to solve, and then randomized certain things, threw balls at the robots, and so the task for the controller was then, okay, remain stable while I'm getting all these forces being sent to me in a randomized fashion. So that was one, and the other was that we suddenly started to have data sets of people doing things,
mm-hmm.
Dancing or moving around, doing kung fu movements and so on. So once you have a data set, then a research community can start to deal with these things, and suddenly it becomes an optimization problem, right? Because you put up a metric, a kind of a success metric, and now everybody can just do, you know, different techniques for optimizing that success metric. And in that case, it was, okay, can I execute that movement that was previously recorded from a human?
Yeah.
While also taking the constraint, like while not falling over, basically.
Yes.
And so, like, this was around 2018, 2019, and the first papers around that came about. And so over the years, it got better and better, and also to a certain extent more generalized. So now we have a system where you can first of all record a human either through a motion capture suite, like we've been using that for decades in movies.
Exactly.
Right. So you have the suit on, and it has like a certain white round elements on it, and then you have 48 cameras around you, which each costs 6,000 euros, and so you film the person from all sides while they're doing their stuff, and so now you can you can reverse project the points in 3D space. Now you have a temporal movement and with a very high accuracy. And so this is how movies have replaced real actors with animated characters for, I think, probably since the 90s. And so this technique was used. Meanwhile, also purely computer vision-based models become better and better. So you can take a YouTube video of a couple dancing, and even if though it, that has occlusions and they're in close contact and so on, you can actually extract the movements from the people in 3D. So that's basically where we stand today. Doesn't mean that in that video you would still see the hand movements or like tight interactions with a certain material.
Yes.
But you can at least find out where the limbs are. And we can also generalize to a certain extent so that you have one movement then followed by another movement. And meanwhile, you can also have things like, okay, I want to carry a box. So probably the movement itself, I'm only applying it to the upper part of the body while the legs have to maintain the balance, right? So it's, there you split it up in a way. So there's a lot of different pieces are already there. And so this is why when you see these robots move, they become very human-like.
Yes.
But in the case of the dancing robots, and there was a very famous presentation at the Chinese New Year's festival.
Very impressive.
These are just clones, and they're all executing the same movements that was pre-recorded. It also runs only for a couple of minutes, so the robot's task is really only to fulfill that one thing. You can train it in simulation. You can have hundreds of thousands of maybe like overall billions of examples that flow into these models. And all it does is just, becoming a very, very robust system because it has seen everything that was thrown on him.
Okay.
Or maybe even variations on the floor, right, that it needs to counterbalance. And so then given a machine learning function, it has just found out how to deal with that.
So specifically talking about like this demo or scripted setup. So they basically have been trained either by somebody in a motion suit or by the virtual world. So basically running millions of iterations of the thing they are going to do in a virtual environment. And then this is being then programmed into the robot, and then the robot does its thing in a controlled environment, right?
In a certain controlled environment. So, for example, there you were on stage,
yeah.
So you had only
flat
like
surface,
a flat,
same lights.
Flat surface. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And does that, so that is also then the execution is very impressive, but obviously it's very controlled. And what? How does that help us like looking at robots that are not used or that are more used into a uncontrolled environment? Because the thing that is, I think, is very impressive is the counterbalance and making the robot being not as clumsy as the ones used in DARPA, right? Because him doing a backflip and then standing is, I think, quite impressive. But how does that help us going forward in using them in our daily lives outside of scripted environments?
Yeah, I mean, that's where the gap comes in, right? So first of all, these robots do not interact a lot with the environment. They're just standing on the floor. So we are now getting the first demos where, you can lift a box and you can walk around with the box. So it's a much harder problem because now you have to leave the whole scripted thing. The other is if you are thinking of doing very, or maybe I should say this first. So why is the development still extremely impressive? Because we have figured out how to build a humanoid with a very similar motion characteristics to a human.
Mm-hmm.
So like how fast a leg or an arm is moving or how fast it reacts is already very, very, very similar to a human. And we have made it work with compute units that can deal with all this in fast enough that can actually be as part of the torso, usually the part of the robot itself, just driven by batteries. So like 10 years ago, many of the robots then were still tethered.
Yes.
And so now we can do that with batteries only.
Also a huge advancement, right?
It is. But then obviously then the question is, okay, how efficient is it?
Mm-hmm.
How often does a motor break down, which means that the robot falls over and then everything breaks? There's a ton of problems where you think, okay, in the factory environment, do I need to really solve this problem now in order to produce value? Probably not. No. But obviously, it's a big development, and I think we're gonna see this becoming more and more useful over the years. The current state of things is that now also in China, since last year, we have half marathons being run by humans, and then there's a separate track for humanoids. And yeah. So last year it was still also probably a bit similar to the DARPA challenge. It was a bit better. Like there were people, I think there were teams that made it, but still a lot slower than the humans. This year, the first team, the best team, was I think broke the half marathon record, right? So we are getting in the space where the humanoids can solve the problem of getting to a goal without being controlled externally, and also having the endurance to do it not only for 3 minutes,
yeah,
but maybe for an hour or maybe even longer. Like we have one case where a robot walked for 100 kilometers. And so some of the teams there were still remote controlling it, and they got a penalty. But I think we're getting to the state where these things can actually do that autonomously. So it's a process, but still we're not in the realm of really tight interaction with the environment.
Yeah, that would be my next question as well. Like, what happens for one of these scripted shows if somebody runs on stage? I mean, like, those people like on famous artists, they climb onto the stage and run up. What would happen? Would the robots continue the show, or would they have, like, I don't know, obviously different depending on sensors, but how would they interact with the changes happening?
So, first of all, I think that the robots that do these shows are actually blind.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to have eyes open or ears in order
to do
a movement, right? What they've memorized is somebody kicking me in a simulator.
Yeah.
So if you kick such a robot, they will very likely balance it out up to a certain point. So I think they're pretty robust against that.
And then for the marathon, I mean, there it's much more interesting because obviously it's like 21 point something kilometers, and there's going to be way more obstacles because other robots are running. So they must be super adaptive, like how to not to run into the man in front of them or something like that.
Yeah, so I don't really know the exact details for the different pieces. I can imagine that they have navigation systems and they have some kind of obstacle avoidance. But obviously for a marathon like that, they would also do the minimal parts,
yeah,
right? There was still a separate track. Some robots ran into each other. One robot just collapsed on the starting line. So yeah, I mean, it's still funny and very interesting to watch.
So there's one thing we really have to differentiate then. So we must not mistake movement or perfect execution of movements with understanding of the real world, which is probably the next step and way more important for, I would say, like, really valuable, valuable help from robots or valuable, valuable usage of robots.
Right. So I think if you think about it, many of these robots don't even have hands, like they have stumps.
True.
You don't have to solve the problem of interacting with a physical object apart from the floor, right?
Mm-hmm.
The arms are there for balance. So I think it can be seen that if they swing their arms, they're faster and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it becomes more and more human-like. I think where, like we talked about this before, like you have an object has a material object has certain distribution of weight.
Mm-hmm.
As a human, you would always look at an object and predict its properties before you even touch it.
Oh yeah, so true.
Right, and then I mean, even that, there's these memes on the internet where you know, you can show your friend, okay, oh, this is heavy, and then the friend lifts it and
yeah,
you know,
he'll put suddenly, much more force inside.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So we do these kind of predictions all the time, and we deal with different materials all the time, and we have learned it over the course of, you know, the first, I don't know, maybe a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Right, to deal with the different materials. And so that's a completely different game. And the other part is that we're not just randomly repeating stuff. We're always goal-oriented. We have a certain end state in mind when we try to manipulate something.
Yeah, I mean, that's also interesting. I mean, we talked about how a robot learns, and we already talked to this also in another episode. So by the way, if you watch that episode, we're really detailed talking about how robots learn, because also compared with how babies learn, and it's very impressive how this is done, because actually, like, a human needs about 9 months to walk, or maybe even 10, and to grab objects and stuff needs also some time. So to understand this is a process, but we now have it internalized, but also the machine can, but the computing power is actually quite intense to do all that and all the prediction. So I find that very fascinating. And I would have really thought that the dancing would have, like, because it's so impressive to see a robot in a humanized form dancing, that this would have been like a huge milestone and would have solved everything already. But my question is, like, what kind of demonstration would impress you more than the dancing? Like, looking at it from a usage perspective, from how these robots can be more valuable in human society.
Well, I think it all boils down to how can you manipulate things.
Mm-hmm.
on a very intricate form. Like, if, let's say, you have a circuit board and you want to put something in, you need to be extremely detailed, very little forces, very sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Versus you want to just carry a crate of beer and and stack them.
Yeah.
Everywhere there is forces, but it also depends on the materials. It depends a lot on prediction, especially now when you have moving objects as well, and doing that in a safe manner as well. So mm-hmm. So I think this is more like what we're interested in, what we're working on.
Just a question for me, because I don't know how it's done. So looking at a circuit board, I always thought they were being, like, set by a machine, like a machine does, like, and then it's done. But I have no idea how it's done, to be honest.
It's done in many cases, but there are still things like where you need to plug in something, or mm-hmm. Where the circuit board is already there, but there are certain plugs that are missing or so, yeah.
Thinking about a German or EU plug, which is very interesting, thinking about, you know, the big plugs.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is also an interesting challenge, because putting that into the wall can be, you need the exact amount of pressure. You need a lot of pressure, but not too little, but not too much to push it through the wall. That could be an interesting challenge for robots to solve, to find the exact amount of pressure to push that in to sit firmly without breaking the plug as well.
Yeah, and I think one way to do it is, again, in simulation, but this is a much harder problem than just gravity, right?
Yes.
So suddenly you have to deal with contact-rich
mm-hmm.
Movements of, like, forces of maybe different materials. So there's really only very recently simulators that are getting close to really simulating that in any realistic manner. So we're really on the forefront there.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about a normal simulation, it consists of triangles.
Yes.
Right. So now you have two objects with triangles. Obviously, the that doesn't work out, right?
No.
So you need to do, you know, have a different mathematical representation of these objects. And so now we're seeing that, you know, this is starting to take hold.
I found it fascinating, because for me it's like really like simple things like that, seeing how difficult they are actually for robots to do, but then seeing how impressive the dancing is. So the dancing robots are a milestone, but not the solution yet. I think probably the data helps you really a lot, I guess, right? But it's not the the way we think human robotics is solved and that we have like machines walking the earth already, because it's not like that. It's way right. more.
So I think we're just climbing the ladder of difficulty, and difficulty being constrained by the technology that is available and by the sensors being available. Obviously, there are tactile sensors. So if you put the plug in, there are obviously systems that would allow you to sense the forces there. Now, then the next question is, okay, how do you teach them without losing those forces, or how do you simulate them?
Yeah.
But it is in principle possible. Then the question is, how long does the sensor last? So I think that is a development that is not going to be like, that's not solved now, and it will probably take years to solve. But we're climbing the ladder also from a compute perspective of the difficulty of things that we can that we can deal with. And actually, this is currently one of the things that keep me busy and keep a bunch of people busy in the team, because we get all these customer requests.
Yeah.
Really understanding, okay, oh, when can we do this? Can we do this now? Would it take us 12 or 24 months or 36 months? Because we also need to pick our battles.
Yes, of course. And I think something we talked about as well when we're talking about selfless driving or autonomic driving is that there's like the level you can get to 80% really fast.
Mm.
But obviously nobody wants to drive in a car that is 80% safe. 90% also fast. Then 99% is quite steep. But then it's the 99.9, the 99.99999, and it continues. And this is basically, it gets steeper and steeper because there's so millions of variations.
Mm.
So this seems to be something, when I looked at it from a normal standpoint without having a deep engineering look into it, seemed like, why haven't they solved it yet, right? And you explained it to me that there's like infinite possibilities and you don't want a car to crash at any point. So this is like a problem still need to be solved. For robots, I guess this is going to be very similar, but for the manufacturing, we'll be fine at a point before that, because we can create a safe environment and we don't want to manipulate the whole world, but very specific things. So that means the humanoid robot is not solved yet, but the progress is very real, and Robco's progress is very real, and the usability of robots is increasing massively through the things you're developing.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is exactly what makes this area so interesting from the technologist's point of view, because, I mean, especially when you think about autonomous driving, it took 10, 15 years to get to the state where we are, where we have cars driving around autonomously in the cities, still getting feedback, still being improved, also still in very controlled environments. So if you drive one of those autonomous vehicles from San Francisco to Alaska, they wouldn't work, right?
Yeah.
Because they're still constrained on where they can drive. And so I think just going from where we are right now, where things are pre-programmed on the level of up to what we call level 2 autonomy, so computer vision, to the next step is where we say, hey, we can do a small task here. We can start dealing with that. We can build the feedback loops and take it from there.
Thank you so much, Clemens. It was really insightful. And thank you for showing us that the dancing robots have not solved the humanoid robot problem yet, but they're, you know, a milestone, definitely. And I think it's still very impressive. And all the companies who are working in that space, creating these demos, it's definitely impressive, especially comparing how from 2015, falling over robots can now dance. But yeah, that doesn't mean we'll have a robot butler arriving for us tomorrow. But for factories, this might be a huge step. And yeah, the next step is not about whether robots can impress us, but more about how they can do something and help us for hours and hours on end. I think it's also really important that a three-minute demonstration is something that is not as valuable as like running a marathon for maybe 2 hours or working in a factory for 8 hours, which is way, way more valuable and much more, well, important, I would say. So thank you for pointing that out. And if you've enjoyed the episode, obviously, then please give us a like, subscribe, and leave a comment there. We'd love to answer them. And definitely contact us as well if you're interested. and share this episode with anybody who wants to learn more about robots and has been asking you about how the dancing robots have not, why we don't have a housemaid or butler at our house already. Clemens just answered that why. And yes, we'd love to see you when we have our next episode with Rob Talk from Robco. And obviously, if you want to know more about Robco, if you want to get in touch with Clemens, please look him up on LinkedIn. And also, if you want to get in touch with the company, visit our website at rob.co. And yeah, we're working on the future of robotics all the time. And yeah, you're in it, really in the details every day. So thank you for being here and giving us the insights.
Thank you. Hope to see you soon.
This is Rob Talk, a podcast by Robco. Subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. See you on the factory floor.